blew me off for a bottle of tequila. Tequila's no good for you. Doesn't call, doesn't write. It's not nearly as much fun to wake
Hello
up to.
And welcome to Scalpels and Tequila. I'm Tamsin.
And I'm Ayla. Thank you all so much for joining us today. It is season 3, episode 5.
Seven. Seven.
Yeah, I'm not even mad. I fucked that one up. Hi. It's also very early in the morning, team. We are doing this before our work days.
It is cold where the boys are.
Where my boys at? They're in the woods being sookie babies.
No, they're in the woods being mountain men in the wild.
So sookie babies at a sleepover.
Open-handed combat.
Men being men.
Yeah.
I'm a mountain man. Please zip me
Interesting.
Up.
Interesting episode. As we were just saying right before we started recording, actually Ayla was saying it, so I'm going to let Ayla say that again.
I think that this episode is one, we didn't start this podcast to be a Grey's Anatomy podcast. We started this podcast because we do have a love for Grey's Anatomy, but what we really love about this series as a whole is how it is a perfect reflection of what's going on in society at the time it was filmed. Now, when we look back at shows from the 90s and the early 2000s, a lot of the younger generation is quite shocked at what we found as entertainment. But Grey's Anatomy is a little bit different in that it shows behaviors that were really common at the time and things that were acceptable at the time, while also managing to just break so many boundaries, especially when it comes to people of color, the LGBTQI community. And this episode is a great example of all of that. And how our perceptions have changed and how society's perceptions have changed and about how Nikki can get directly into the fucking bin.
Yeah, Grey's Anatomy did a lot of firsts for TV. Grey's Anatomy really, yeah, broke down some barriers, really pushed what we could see in mainstream media, which was awesome. But that doesn't exclude it from making mistakes.
At the time, they weren't necessarily – at the time, it was this weird line between giving space for these people to exist and just not quite enough understanding.
I mean, we're talking about it in more general than just this episode right now, but it gave space for conversations. Yes. Let's get into it. So, as usual, we do start with Meredith's monologue. And as usual, I am going to read it. I didn't know how to segue into that. As surgeons, we are trained to look for disease. Sometimes the problem is easily detected. Most of the time, we need to go step by step. First, probing the surface, looking for any sign of trouble, a mole or a lesion or an unwelcome lump. Most of the time, we can't tell what's wrong with somebody just by looking at them. After all, they can look perfectly fine on the outside, while their insides tell a whole other story. Not all wounds are superficial. Most wounds run deeper than you can imagine. You can't see them with the naked eye. And then there are wounds that take us by surprise. The trick with any kind of wound or disease is to dig down and find the real source of the injury. Once you've found it, try like hell to heal the sucker. I think this monologue is really good. We've had a problem with some of the monologues lately, but I really like this one. I think this is a classic Grey's monologue, not too on the nose, still medical, but also very connected to what's happening with everybody in this episode. Because everybody is hurting and everyone is hiding it.
Yeah. I think what's really interesting is that it says that if you've got a wound, you should try like hell to heal it. And I think for physical issues, we do that. We absolutely do that. Mental and emotional ones.
But sometimes the first thing you need to do is talk about it. And that's the Band-Aid, what I think
really hard.
All of our characters, not all, but a lot of our characters try and do this episode. They probe each other. They ask little leading questions and we get some answers and we get some insight into how a lot of them are feeling. And we learn quite a lot about our characters this episode.
All of them. So many of them.
Yeah.
This episode opens up in Christina and Burke's apartment, and Christina is rightly flabbergasted that Burke is going with Derek on a camping trip.
Because Prestons don't go into the woods. Prestons don't sleep on the ground. Prestons don't go camping.
I feel like Preston is a similar last name to Montgomery, you know, the last name of wealth, unless you're in Melbourne, and then Preston is a pretty rough suburb.
Preston is his first name, not his last name.
See, this is why he can't be trusted. He has two last names.
So he's going camping with Derek. Derek needs to go camping. He needs to get away. They are packing the car.
Ugh.
They are calling themselves mountain men. Men getting into the wild. And then, surprisingly to Derek, they pick up Weber.
With his little picnic basket.
And then they pick up George.
Oh.
And this scene is so uncomfortable. Izzy is fussing like it's like she's his mum, being like, have you got this? Have you got that? I packed your snacks.
And George calls her out and says, you're not my mother, leave me alone. But then does a full 360 and says, zip me up. Help me with my zip.
And then he's like, Izzy baked us baked goods and snacks. Yay.
Yeah, it's weird. But yeah, Preston's just kind of ruined the day for Derek.
It's weird, but I do find the humor in this.
Absolutely.
And I like that they're saying mountain men and men of the wild, but it does feel a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Mm-hmm.
I think the show thinks it's silly. They're not taking this seriously, and I think that's important. Because if they were really taking this seriously, they wouldn't go on to have all of the silliness that ensues on this camping trip. Because they are calling themselves mountain men. They are really getting into the masculine energy of this idea of this boys' trip in the woods. And then what ensues is like kind of the opposite of that. And Christina calls it out and says they're just Izzy calls it out and says it's just a slumber party. They just do theirs outdoors.
And look, I think that everyone thinks it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek because they pick up Joe and Walter, who are just there to have a bit of a good time in their tent. But Alex is the point of difference.
Well, they're there for like a little romantic getaway with some friends, right? Right.
But Alex is the point of difference. Alex is the one who genuinely thinks they're there to be manly, manly mountain men and wants to take offense at the fact that the person who he considers the least manly can out-camp him.
Yeah.
Alex gets real salty at George just knowing about the outdoors. And I don't know if it's necessarily that he considers it a more manly trait or if he's more a little bit hurt that he didn't have the same experiences with his family growing up.
That's how I read it.
Yeah.
Yes, he puts on his little Alex shield, his little Alex tough suit, and that's how it comes across. But honestly, I think we learn a lot about Alex this episode, and I do think it is Alex is just jealous that he didn't have this relationship with his dad that George had, because George is talking a lot about all this bonding he did with his dad. They went camping. He taught him how to fish, and Alex didn't get any of that. And Alex actually opens up about his childhood a little bit later in this episode, and I think it's a bit sad. Alex admits that he grew up in a bar. His dad was there either drinking or playing music. And it doesn't really seem like any of this time was really bonding with Alex as a kid. And Alex went on this trip to make friends. And Alex is disappointed in himself that he let his little hard Alex shell, his little hard Alex suit, get in the way and kind of revert back to some shitty behavior and try and hurt George when George is trying to get close to him, when George is trying to help, when George is trying to bond.
I think George did get a little bit of enjoyment out of having one up on Alex and knowing a little bit more.
Yeah, totally, because George is a weasel.
I just love that Weber had his concierge put a picnic basket together full of soft cheeses. I'm Weber in this situation.
No, you're not. You would have put it together yourself.
Yes, I would have put it together myself.
Weber, again, is showing us He cannot do a single fucking thing without Adele.
Oh, I didn't pick that up at all.
Mm.
Yep, you are correct. Yeah, he can't. He had the concierge. He didn't even bring a damn tent. He wants to share with Joe and Walter and is very enthused about the idea until he finds out that Joe's, his favourite barman's there for a little romantic getaway.
Yeah, and then he does this very uncomfortable, very awkward, very man of that age response of like, I'm hip, I'm cool. My brother, cousin's gay. I'm cool. Brokeback Mountain and all that.
But I wrote it down.
And you're like, chill, dude. Chill.
What did he say? Matt, oh, I'm down with the man love. My cousin's gay. That's great. Brokeback Mountain and all of that. Oh, honey.
God, Weber.
He tried.
As awkward and uncomfortable and unnecessary as him saying that is, in the real world, not in the script, I do think that is a very realistic response from a man that age who probably doesn't really have that much to do with the queer community at all.
True.
That's kind of how they respond, because he's not trying to be homophobic. He's not being judgmental, but he's overly correcting, which makes it awkward.
Significantly more awkward. Yes.
Yeah. But I do enjoy that it's not a big deal for anybody else there. They all just like, yeah.
I'm just like, yeah. It's the fact that it's not a big deal for anyone.
And the show doesn't make it a point of. But this is why I think Grey's Anatomy is really great in this way. And I think this was actually breaking some boundaries at this point. It's like Joe and Walter's whole storyline is not about the fact that they're gay, you know? Today, a little bit, but it's more about the fact that they're a happy couple.
Yeah.
And everyone else on this trip is not in any happy relationship.
They're the only stable, communicative, mutually respectful relationship out of all of them.
Well, we don't really know the ins and outs of their relationship, but that is how it's presented to us. So, yes, that's the way that they're talked about. So it's apart from Weber's blunder and Weber's kind of, I guess the idea is that it is supposed to be a little bit of comic relief because he's the last one in the know. And he puts his foot in it.
But none of them know how to fish. All they seem to be doing is a lot of fishing. That's a lie. Derek knows how to fish.
Derek knows how to fish, but they're not catching any fish. And it is an issue. And Derek hates it.
Yeah, I think Derek keeps reiterating that this was his trip and he wanted the silence and the atmosphere. And Burke brings up something really valid, and that's that Derek has no friends here.
Mm-hmm.
Weber is his friend, but they're professional acquaintances who've known each other for a really long time. But, yeah, there's no one that he really spends time with. He doesn't have much of a social life that isn't just having a drink at the bar and sitting with whichever other doctor is willing to have a whiskey with him.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He has no friends.
And to be honest, Burke doesn't seem to really have any friends either. He says he does because he invited George and Alex and stuff to come along, but they're your subordinates. Yeah. It's something that we brought up before with Callie being treated so poorly by Meredith and Izzy, and we were just like, I don't know why she's trying so hard. I would be just bitching about these horrible girls to my friends.
No friends. No.
But Burke's friend, Georgie Porge, who he invites along, that may have been a mistake. As they're fishing, George sees his hand have a little shake while he's trying to do something with the fishing rod.
Yeah, he's trying to put the little thing on the end of it, and his hand shakes, and George sees it and says, are you okay? And Burke quickly dismisses him and goes off to another side of the river. The other thing that happens in this conversation is Burke asks George about Callie. And George says him and Callie are great. They're really good. They're really good, but Callie doesn't know it yet, which is yucky. And George says he wasn't ready before and he's ready now and he's going to step up.
Ham and eggs.
He's stepping up. Ham and eggs.
It's where is the... Men don't have a uterus. That is the pouch where all of their audacity is kept. Because why? What leads you to believe that?
Some men have uteruses.
Yeah, they don't tend to have the audacity, though, do they? Yeah, why? I don't understand why he thinks that he even has a right to go anywhere near Callie. She's, again, set a boundary and gave him a window. She gave him a window. Oh, Callie.
Totally.
Gave him a window.
It's interesting. Burke is the one kind of having chats with people on this trip. Burke is probing. Burke is asking questions. Burke is really trying to get to know these people. We tend to see Burke as being a lot more self-involved and a lot very self-involved and very all about Burke a lot of the time. But I think we see a bit of a different side of him on this trip where he is genuinely interested in how everyone's going.
He's always been portrayed as quite a spiritual person as well. Like he's always tried to find that emotional connection with other people because it's never been offered by Christina.
That's interesting.
That's how I've seen it all the time. But everything's going swimmingly for the fish puns.
Until
our wee little babies get in a wee little tiff.
So Alex gets a bit defensive because George is like, hey, that's not how you do the fishing. I'll give you a little tip. And Alex, this is when his spikes come out. He gets grumpy, he gets defensive, and he just throws out Callie and Sloane are sleeping together. Torres is doing Sloane.
Yeah, because he already prefaced it with saying, you shouldn't. I think he tried to help at the start by saying, I think you should probably just leave this Callie thing alone. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
He did. And then, you know, at the start, George was like, ha, 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 you're wearing sneakers and a T-shirt. You're going to freeze. And then he doesn't know how to fish. And he's just been niggling at him all day. So Alex goes, all right, this is why you shouldn't be with Callie. And says something that he knows specifically is going to hurt George.
And they have a fight, like little frat boys.
Mm-hmm. So Granddaddy Webber steps in and says, all right, boys, you are surgeons. I'm not going to outright stop this. We're just going to put some rules in place. You're going to protect your hands. You're going to protect your body. And we are going to have some open-handed combat.
A slap fight.
Mm-hmm. No wrestling moves because we all know, or do we know that Alex was a wrestler in high school?
Wrestler. Yeah, I think we find that out very early on.
Yeah.
And they're going to have a slap fight. It turns into a little bit of a Fight Club moment. We've got
mediating.
We've got Webber mediating, creating the rules. And we've got Burke and Derek on the sidelines kind of picking their guys.
Yeah, taking bets. Burke's really into it. He's a guy who enjoys the boxing.
Burke believes in George.
Yeah.
George is his guy. George has always been his guy.
George is scrappy.
And Derek is just like, Alex is going to kill him. Alex is going to destroy
gonna
him.
Straight up murder him.
But they are into it.
George grew up with brothers.
And the acting of both of these guys I find really great.
Mm-hmm.
Like you've got T.R. Knight doing his awkward George thing, but the way he like pulls off his beanie really angrily and throws it to the ground and then changes his jumper with his little angry bulldog face.
And that's exactly what it is. It looks like a puppy bulldog.
Totally. You know when like little puppies try and bark and try and be aggressive, but they just kind of look cute. It's totally that.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. And then Alex is there with his hands. He's
just
kind
a freaking lazy Doberman.
He's kind of moving his hands around like they're magical or
like
something.
Like he's watched The Matrix one too many times.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
And Burke also says that O'Malley is silent but deadly. And I just...
Yeah, he is a fart.
Do not agree.
He's an absolute fart of a human. And it's all fun and games and slap fights until Joe and Walter come back from their little hike and the boys bump into Walter and he smashes his brain on a rock. And I thought this was going to be a lot more of a hullabaloo than it was, but it was just an opportunity for Burke to stand there with a makeshift sewing needle hovering over Walter's head as him and George lock eyes, and George does, you're right, a weaselly thing. And says, don't worry, Dr. Burke's great at this. And there was no reason for Burke to take offence at that if he weren't great at this.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Burke knows. Burke's realised that George has figured it out, and they have a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And Burke looks at George like fire is going to come shooting out of his eyes and he's going to make George explode. It's a really intense stare.
I think he looks at George the way that Bailey spends this episode staring down Christina.
So Christina's in the doghouse with Bailey today.
She fucking should be.
as she fucking should be, because Bailey still has no idea why Christina took her name off the board. And yes, she knows it's Christina because she spied Christina touching the board last episode.
Because as we said before, all of our girls are having a chat about these dumb boys in the dumb woods having their dumb sleepover. And Sloan comes up to sexually harass Meredith into his service. Meredith says no. Bailey gives out the allocation. And so Bailey comes and does just that. She hands Meredith over to Sloan. She tells Izzy that Izzy's going to go spend the day with a peer counselor. And Christina, well, Christina's being given Eric, who is being a whiny little boy, because he is a little boy, swallowed a bunch of Monopoly pieces to get back at his brother for not letting him play. And her job is to find those Monopoly pieces, get them all, and not in the way that Yang would have liked, because
it is not surgical.
No. And we all know that Yang was going to get mad at this, but Bailey says, are you too good to help that boy? No surgeries for you. I don't understand why you erased my name from that ER board. Until you tell me why, no surgeries for you.
This is like Christina's death wish. Like, this is Christina's worst nightmare. She is completely blocked from surgery. Her name will not be on the OR board until she confesses. But it's also Christina completely showing how devoted she is to Burke, because she is keeping this secret in detriment of her own career.
Do you remember in season one when Christina was listing all the things that could go wrong when you're sleeping with an attending to Meredith, and Meredith thought that Christina was talking about her? It's actually coming true for Christina. Meredith's career hasn't really been affected in a super negatively way.
No.
No. Christina's, though, very negatively impacted. But I don't think her day is as shit as Izzy's, because Izzy's peer counselor today is Sydney the Smiley, and they need to have a dialogue.
Sydney, heal with love, Sydney. She is back, and she is peppy, and she is happy.
Smiley Sydney.
And she is so ready to dialogue with Izzy. And Izzy could not want to dialogue less, to the point where Izzy needs to run. Izzy needs to get away. And the place Izzy runs to is Christina, because she says, does anyone have anything I can do? Anything I can do to keep me busy, keep me distracted, and keep me hidden from having to hang out with Sydney? And Christina's like, yeah, definitely. Definitely come and do this for me. I do not want to. And pulls Izzy into the room with her patient and gets Izzy to sort through this patient's poop looking for Monopoly pieces.
And look, Sydney does come and find them, and she's like, look, I'll just wait till you guys are done. It's fine. I'm just going to chill here. Until eventually she says it's time to go. And the first thing that she does, which was quite brash, in my opinion, was just...
Well, no, Christina is so over it that she kind of begs Izzy to go.
Yeah.
And eventually Izzy gives in. She's like, all right, let's get out of here, Sydney.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's over Sydney being there. Sorry.
Yeah, because Izzy brought Sydney into Christina's room.
The room.
And then Christina's like, I was doing you a favor. This is my pile of poop, and you have brought Sydney into this, and now I will no longer share this with you.
This is my poop. But Sydney just dive straight in. There is no sugarcoating it with Sydney, funnily enough. She says, just tell me about Denny. It helps to share. And look, to be honest, if I was Izzy, I probably would have had the exact same reaction.
Yeah.
And that is, I would rather sift through feces than talk to you.
Yeah, it's a hard one, because I agree with Sydney. I do think it really helps. I do think talking helps. And sometimes talking to someone who doesn't know you very well is actually the right person to talk to.
Oh, I strongly agree, but
Izzy's not ready to talk too much. She doesn't really want to talk to anyone about who's her friend who can keep asking her and keep, you know.
Yeah. Oh, no, I just think I think that the way that Sydney went around it the second time was good. Like, we know that Sydney is not an unintelligent person. She said on the episode that she was featured in last time, "Do not mistake my kindness and my happiness for a lack of intelligence."
Yeah.
She's a really smart person. She knows that these kids do not respect her and do not want to have anything to do with her. So having that intelligence tells me that she should have gone about it the other way. Like, hey, I'm your peer counselor today. I'm here to talk about whatever you want to. And the reason they've picked me is because I lost a child. My first year, it was my fault. Yeah. I had a complete breakdown. I came back smiling and everyone thought it was fine, but it comes in waves. And I'm not trying to pry at all. I just want to let you know that it's not okay to be okay. And if there's anything that you want to talk about today, I'm here for you to listen. I know that I can't be 100% empathetic because I don't know exactly what you went through, but something similar did happen to me. But she does at the end. It's dumb.
It's dumb.
It's so dumb because it's not like she got to work in the morning and was told, hey, we're going to need you to counsel Izzy Stevens. That would have been a few parts process of, are you comfortable with this? Is it something that you want to do? Can you spend a day doing this or do you have a high caseload?
I doubt it.
She would have had time to prepare.
She would have just got assigned a thing today.
She's a resident.
Just like they all do.
Bailey is a resident.
Residents are not that high.
She's caseload.
Yeah, but Bailey's chief resident. She tells the other residents what they're doing. I don't think Sydney would have had time to prepare for this at all. I reckon she would have got to work today and someone went, cool, this is what you're doing today.
Well, in that case, she had the entire first half of the day where Izzy was sifting through feces to figure out a better way around it.
It's just funny to me that you find this so, I don't know. I think she's doing exactly what I would have done. I would not have known how to handle this. I wouldn't have gone straight in and said my story. I would have probably done the exact same thing. Followed her around and be like, do you want to talk? I'm here if you want to talk, if you want to say something. It would have taken me a while to be like, oh, I probably have to open up first. I reckon I would have done the exact same thing. And I think it's good writing that it happens at the end. But she does. She opens up to Izzy at the end of the day and we hear from Izzy that it doesn't come in waves. It's constant. It's all the time. I walk through the doors of the hospital and I want to be here. I do. But I don't know. I don't know if I can be a surgeon again, and I can't talk about it because it scares me too much. And that's so real. I really feel for Izzy in this moment. I think this is something that we didn't fully understand about Izzy until now.
I think she's been pretty apprehensive and pretty nervous coming back, like last week in the elevator with the first day. I'm fine. You're fine. I'm excited.
Totally.
And the shock of how much things have changed and not only how much the hospital has changed, but her responsibilities have changed a lot too.
Oh, that's so true. There has been so many changes and they have really been pushing that, like letting us see how much has shifted. And Izzy has changed so much. She's gone through such a huge life-altering experience and all of a sudden she's back in this place.
Doing the same things in different ways.
And her dream, her whole life, the thing that she's wanted to do for so long is be a surgeon, and now to not know if that's what you want to do anymore, that's a huge scary thing. It's like she's standing on the edge of a cliff and she just doesn't know if she
can jump.
Wants to jump or not, you know?
She can't talk to anyone about it.
Mm. No, because all of her friends are still
surgeons
and they're jumping. Yeah. They've wanted to jump. They're going to jump. And they would be like, what? We've come this far. We're 3 years into this. What are you doing? Jump.
Yeah. But
they won't understand. No. And that's why it's good that she's talking to someone that isn't her friends.
So because Christina, she's stuck with the poop, and Eric, mm-hmm. her patient, comes over and gives her a little bit of shit.
Yeah, this is a really interesting little scene. I love it when Christina talks to the patients, when she gets a little bit deep with the patient.
Because he's talking about how he won. You know, he's the winner. My mom's going to make my brother let me play Monopoly whenever I want now. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, but you know, could have died.
Yeah, there could have been complications. Like, this is dangerous.
You could have injured yourself. There could have been complications. Yeah, this is dangerous. And he's like, well, you're the one sifting through my poo. So who's the winner now? Well, it's Christina. It's Bailey. Because the next time we see Eric, his bowels have perforated.
Yeah.
And something is caught. Dr. Bailey's paged and he's rushed immediately into surgery. But Christina enters the scrub room to have a chat with Bailey because she's been on the case all day. She assumes that she'll be in the surgery.
Yeah, it's her patient. She's been with him and she's still not allowed in for surgery.
Mm-mm. And Bailey again says to her, tell me why you erased my name off the board. And Christina starts putting the, oh, no, I didn't. Bailey's just like, I don't want this bullshit. I've seen you at the board. Why did you erase my name? And all Christina has to say is, I have no comment. Well, then you can't go into surgery. You've chosen your own fate. And until you tell me what the fuck's going on, you need to leave. No surgery for you. No super for you.
Yeah. So Christina's really in a hard place now because she kind of has to decide like her career or Burke's career.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't be her decision.
No. She shouldn't be in this situation in the first place.
So it's the end of the day and Christina's very defeated, I think. I think Christina's really waiting for Burke to see how much this is affecting her and make a decision and take the pressure off her and let her not hold on to this anymore. Because Burke, the boys all decide they're not staying the night. They want to go home. So they come back to their mums and Burke walks into the hospital and gives Christina a hug and she's so relieved he's there. And I think that's because some of the burden of what's going on is taken off her, but it really should all be taken off her.
Yeah, definitely. I think having Burke there is a reminder that she's not alone in this. Because a really interesting chat that we didn't actually mention that happens in the woods is that Burke has a chat with George again about Kelly. And Burke rightfully says to George, your standards are too high. You cannot handle it when one person makes a tiny mistake. You write them off and you get angry straight away and you fight. People make mistakes. And George says, what about you and Christina? I think your standards are too high. And he says, no, me and Christina are a team.
Where one person does all the work.
We are a team. We're in this together. We're not, you know, fighting, I guess, is what he's trying to say. He's not. Neither of them putting each other on a pedestal, I think is what Burke is trying to say, and that they are a team.
Equals?
Yeah, which is tricky. It's interesting that Burke thinks this. But this definitely isn't.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there.
This definitely isn't what's happening.
It's not even a mutually beneficial relationship at this point.
I mean, Christina does, like, is learning and getting a lot of surgical skills out of it, but
not in the right way.
And she doesn't get any credit. And she's kind of isolating herself and isolating her friends from her because all of her energy is going into Burke and Burke's career and Burke's hand.
Well, since we're on the topic of
that's tricky.
Tricky relationships, is it time to get into the Donna and Nikki of it all? So it's time to head over to our Dirty Mistresses Club, where Meredith has instituted three rules. Number one, no flirting. Number two, no talking about Derek or Addison. And number three, no giving me the McSteamy face.
That's a dumb rule. Wouldn't you just want that face all the time?
I can't believe that a subordinate is again setting boundaries in a workplace to prevent sexual harassment. And they are blatantly ignored within 0.3 seconds of them being stated.
Which is kind of a joke because Mark turns around and says, if I was going to the woods, I would have invited you along to keep me warm. And she's like, well, that's rule one, two, and three, just broken straight away.
But yeah, it's really this episode that we sort of figure out that Mark seems to have some sort of a genuine interest in Meredith. And all I could think of was 10 things I hate about you. When Heath Ledger cons the classic phrase, what is it with this girl? Does she have beer-flavored nipples or something? About Meredith. What kind of pheromones is that girl pumping out? But their patient today is Donna. And this storyline is difficult.
It is and it isn't, I think. It's difficult because a lot of these characters, our characters, really fuck up. But the character of Donna is very clear, very concise, very true and very unapologetic. And we aren't, the audience isn't made to be, like, this character isn't a comic relief character. This character isn't to be looked down upon or pitied or, this character is a full, complex mm-hmm. character.
So I do want to talk about a little bit about Alexandra Scott Billings, who is the actress who played Donna. So she is not only an actress but a teacher, a singer, and an activist. She works a lot for trans rights within Hollywood and in general. She was actually the very first actress in 2005, the first openly transgender woman to have played a transgender character in 2005. And it's almost 20 years on. And I feel like Grey's Anatomy is still one of the only shows that uses transgender actors in transgender roles.
Yeah.
But they've been doing it from day dot. I feel like Shonda must have initially seen that, yeah, if you're going to have this character in there, then it best be played by a person who fills the role.
I think it's important. And I think it's great that they did that. And they were, Shonda was correct in doing that. And I think it's really good. I think it's really good that this is happening here. But there are problematic and not great things happening as well.
For one, Nikki just constantly
dead naming their partner,
using their dead name and using the wrong pronouns.
It's been 2 fucking years, Nikki. Get your shit together. I cannot believe that Mark is more considerate of Donna than Donna's own partner, than Donna's wife.
All of my notes are just saying, stop calling her a husband, stop calling her Daniel, stop calling her a him, or referring to her as he.
Meredith comes in and reads the chart. And reads the chart as it's written, as Meredith probably doesn't. Meredith just reads it and she says, she uses the word Daniel, 34 is in for, I think, what do they call it? I think they might call it gender reassignment surgery or something. And then straight away.
Yeah. But why are they listed as Daniel?
Exactly. Because straight away, Mark says, Meredith, it's Donna. Donna has been using the name Donna for 2 years. Get, like, step it up, basically. He says something. He's like, get on it, get with it.
But, like, why didn't he check the forms? Like, any.
Why was it not written on the form? Because if it was written on the form, Meredith would have read it. But also, why is the wife still the. I give props to Mark for correcting Meredith, but I don't think it's Meredith's fault because it doesn't seem like it was written there. But who's. Who's looking out for Donna when Donna is not with Mark, when Donna is being consistently dead-named and being used the wrong pronouns by Donna's own wife?
Don't understand why Nikki is there. I know that Nikki goes on to say that, you know, she came back because Daniel is her best friend, and whenever she goes on a date, all she wants to do is talk to her best friend about it. And I'm like,
Mike, you're not a very good friend, Nikki.
No, but it's also really selfish reasons. I'm like, cool, so you haven't gone back for them. You totally. Don't care about them. You care about how their existence impacts your life. And that's not a reason to be with someone. It's just, it's really, and the fact that all Nikki seems to talk about it as the physicality of this. And don't get me wrong, I think that potentially mm-hmm. being in a relationship with someone and them affirming their gender and it being potentially different to what you thought it was initially, that's probably a difficult situation, but you've kind of got a choice to make. And I think that if you're not 100% in, then you need to be out.
Definitely.
If you can't just meet the fucking bare minimum requirements of calling them by their correct name and gender and standing up for them in front of other people and making sure that no one treats this person poorly or in a way that they don't wish to be treated.
And that is how relationships should be, regardless of gender.
Correct.
That is just a relationship.
But can we talk about I'm really going to miss the penis? Oh, and the fact that they say they keep commending Nikki for how remarkably well she is handling all of this.
Yeah, that's what I had a problem with.
We wanted to have kids and now that's out of the window. Why?
Why? This character, the way that they talk to Nikki and treat Nikki, as in our doctors, is really damaging, I think.
It's reaffirming that her awful behavior should be commended.
Yeah. And it's also reaffirming some really wrong and
distasteful.
Yeah, and damaging is the only word I can think of. Damaging views on this couple not being able to have kids now. That's completely untrue.
Yeah.
And really harmful and damaging to this community.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want, when you finally have a trans actor playing a trans character on primetime TV.
And this was millions of viewers at the time.
You can't have views like this being spouted about, especially on a show that was seen to be so progressive.
And, well, that's the thing. This is where it all comes to the crux of what we were saying earlier, in that, yeah, a lot of this is fucked up, but the fact that they have a trans person on their show being played by a trans person.
Yeah.
That is not in any way derogatory or negative towards that person or their choice to, you know, move forward with their life in the way that they see fit. That's what was revolutionary. But again, damaging.
Yeah.
Hard.
The character of Nikki really fucked this up.
Yeah, if the character of Nikki wasn't there, great. Be Donna's best friend?
Yeah.
An advocate?
Yeah.
That's the problem. There was no advocacy.
Yeah. Mark is the advocate in this.
Mm-hmm.
Mark is stepping up. Mark is completely there purely for Donna.
Yeah.
Mark's great.
Mark does great. But they find in the pre-surgery tests that Donna has breast cancer. So I did some looking into it, and the hormone replacement does put you at a higher risk of breast cancer.
Yeah, if you're taking extra estrogen, it can't, yeah.
It still doesn't put you as at higher risk of having breast cancer as just being a cisgendered woman.
Mm.
But it does increase the risk of cancer. But nowhere in my 2 hours of Googling could I find anything that said that you would have to stop taking the hormones. Oh, if you stop taking the replacement hormones, it can be very damaging physiologically, psychologically, and to your hormones. It can completely, yeah, like you would potentially go through as much damage as you would staying on it and receiving cancer treatments. But it leads Donna to have this line of, so if I become a woman, I die. Now, that line in particular, my notes all just said, all in caps, in bold, you are a woman.
I noted that as well.
It's the definition that they have in this time where it really was important that your genitals matched your gender.
Another damaging thing.
And that view is very much changed, and people being fought more and more to be changed.
But what's interesting as well is that the show even included that, because when we meet Donna, we learn that Donna changed her pronouns and has been living as a woman for the last 2 years before this surgery anyway. So it's so kind of unnecessary that they reiterated this idea of becoming a woman through this surgery, because we've already established that Donna is a woman. Mm-hmm. So to then add in that kind of antiquated view seemed unnecessary.
I think a lot of people still don't necessarily feel complete without top or bottom surgery. And no, it means
understand that. That's not what I was saying at all.
But then they also go to say that if they stop the hormones and they don't do the surgery, Mark, for the first time, really fucks up and says she goes back to being an unhappy man with a penis. There's got to be a workaround. They have figured out so many ways around different issues. There's got to be a workaround.
But Mark took that cue from what Donna was saying, because as you just said, which is what Donna doesn't feel complete without this surgery, and Donna was saying she won't feel like a woman until she has this surgery. And she says, so if I stay, she says, I will either fight the cancer as a woman. She wants to feel like a woman as she's fighting breast cancer. She wants to be a woman as she's fighting breast cancer. She wants to be a woman post-surgery fighting this cancer. She doesn't want to stop the hormones and feel like a man again.
I think we're both on the same page here.
Yeah, I'm just saying what Mark said, I don't think was Mark.
Oh, he was reiterating what Donna had pre-diving said.
He was reiterating how Donna felt. I don't think it was Mark believing that.
You are right.
I think Mark was saying, like, Donna's going to be, this is how Donna feels.
And I don't know what happened next, but all I know is that my notes say, fuck off, Nikki. Her name is Donna. So she must have said Daniel again, again, again.
She just constantly says Daniel, and it's so infuriating. She should have just been her best friend.
She was. And I think because Donna's officially said, no, fuck you, we're doing the surgery, Nikki leaves. And so they go into surgery, and Meredith's still having a few issues with what's going on. And Mark, we start to see a little bit more of his kindness and his insightfulness, because Mark's view on plastic surgery is very different to the shallow look that everyone has for Mark. And he says, people don't come to me to fix what's on the outside. They come to me to fix what's on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that we feel about our bodies and the changes that we want to make to our bodies are often based on how we feel about them on the inside. Under no circumstances should you change your body for anyone else, though.
Totally. And I think this line is also really connected to this theme of this episode, of having something wrong with how you're feeling, having something going on inside you and you're not sharing it, not talking about it, not knowing how to fix it. And that's kind of what this whole episode is about, talking, letting that stuff out, trying to open up, trying to heal yourself from the inside out. And I love that Mark gets to explain that that's how he sees his job. That's how he sees plastics. He helps people do something to help them get through the day, to help them feel better about themselves. And he gets to be that guy, whether it be a nose job or not.
Wrong nose. The smaller lower horn. Who told you that? Human horns.
So after the surgery, Nikki comes back.
She should have gone directly into the bin.
I think Nikki should have said, like, I'm clearly I don't think we should stay married because I'm not in the right frame of mind, not in the right space. This is too hard for me to go through as your
spouse,
like romantic partner, spouse, but you are my best friend and I want to be here for you. Let's just stay best friends and I will come with you on this journey.
Stay roommates.
But also, I don't even think you want Nikki as that. I'm saying all of this, but Nikki's going to continually dead name Donna and misgender her, and I'm over it.
Yeah. No, actually, I agree with you.
Like, unless Nikki really fucking steps up. I mean, it's been 2 years and Nikki still can't do it.
No. And do we really think that Nikki's going to be all right with hearing about Donna's romantic escapades? I don't think she's going to be supportive in that. Just doesn't seem like the type, in my opinion.
Anyway.
So bad.
I'm sorry, Donna, but Nikki's sticking around. Our last storyline of the day.
We finally get to see Addison and Callie working together.
Yeah, so we haven't seen these two really together ever.
No.
And it's nice.
Yeah.
Callie is called in to one of Addison's patients because one of Addison's patients has had a fall and hurt some bones. So Addie needs help, needs an ortho. Callie comes in. And we meet this lovely couple.
Jamie, she's so adorable. And Kelly's...
Elizabeth from Friends, for all of you Friends fans out there.
And her husband is from True Blood.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm glad we picked it up for different reasons.
She's also in Drop Dead Gorgeous.
But she comes in with this hugely swollen wrist and Callie's manipulating it. She goes, ow. And Callie's like, don't tough it out. Just say yes to the drugs. But Addison's checking on the baby to make sure it's all right. And she very quickly leaves the room. And again, we see Callie checking in and supporting others because she finds Addison crying in the bathroom.
Callie's the best.
Addison's, these two deserve these each two, other.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that it's a bit awkward because Callie knows that she's sleeping with, like, Callie knows that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we forgot. At the very, very start of this episode, Addison and Callie are just starting their mornings in the attendings lounge, drinking coffee, reading the paper, doing paperwork, whatever. And something very steamy walks in the door, immediately spies Callie and makes some eyes. Turns his head and sees Addison's there and also makes some more eyes. And then sheepishly...
These women are very smart.
Oh, yeah, they're very smart. They know what's going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they know, without needing to utter a word, that, yeah, they've both been there.
And look, both of them have been completely ostracized in this hospital.
Totally.
They have been treated very poorly by other women in this hospital and other people in this hospital. But I think they very rightly have their guard up, like you were saying before, that... You know, it's so surprising that Callie is still so willing to help other people and check in when she's just been nothing but scorned. And Addison did the same.
Yeah. Even although sometimes her check-ins can be a little bit prickly, but they have all the right intention and all the actual care. And as though, even though Callie can just walk around with a bit of a scowl, she's trying to stay a bit guarded. She's so soft and caring on.
Because of the awful treatment by these other girls.
Exactly.
Or how about Addison bringing everyone hot chocolate and it just being immediately thrown in the bin and mocked?
Oh, it's horrific. These two, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love Callie and Addison so much. And they do start today with their walls up. Callie comes in to check on Addie in the bathroom and she's a little bit prickly, but she's still really caring. And
don't make me pick you up. Don't make me climb over this stall. I don't know you so well.
Totally.
But it's the fact that she would.
She would. And it's also this gesture. Callie puts her hand out, like fully offers her a hand to help her up off the bathroom floor. And then they get to talk. And we hear that Addison says, this shouldn't be affecting me like this. I've seen this so many times, but it's just affecting her today. And she's crying as she tells Callie that yesterday that woman was as healthy as can be. And today her baby has died. And Addison is not coping.
And this
she's not coping.
Well, they're standing out the front of the exam room, watching this couple just be the happiest people, knowing that Addison has to go in there and tell them. But Callie is standing by her side. She is there to comfort her and to be emotional support why Addison has to go in and do this horrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Callie gives Addison permission to just wait a minute and let them.
Well, they're saying they're such a happy couple. They're happy. So happy. And I'm about to go in, or Addison is about to go in there and basically take that happiness away. And Callie says, just give them another minute. They say that happy people should have happy things happen to them, which I think is really like a tongue twister of a line, but it's really cute.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Addison and Callie bond. It's interesting as well. You kind of realize with this storyline that Callie is not around this very, I mean, Callie doesn't work with babies. Callie doesn't work with pregnant women very much.
Mm-mm.
This is so new to Callie. And I think it's a bit eye-opening.
She breaks bones.
Yeah. It's eye-opening to see what Addison has to do. Addison does this all the time. Babies, sadly, don't make it a lot.
Oh, yeah, I think I've mentioned it before, but humans have like the highest death rate during birth out of any mammal. We're terrible at having babies.
Oh, both of these humans doing this acting, Sarah Meres and Kate Walsh, this moment where they're just looking at this couple is so good. Their acting in this scene is so good. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say much. There's just a moment after they speak and they're just staring.
They really are both such good actors.
It's really heartbreaking. They're both such good actors, my God.
But Addison does her due diligence.
Mm.
She goes in and tells the couple. And then we get this moment where both Callie and Addie are so defeated by the day that they're just sitting in the corridor, resting against a doorframe.
Well, they deliver the baby first.
Oh, God, I forgot. Oh, that's just...
Which is, yeah, you blocked that out because it's horrific. But what's beautiful is Callie stays.
The whole time she is there to support
Addie,
the comrade. Yeah.
She doesn't need to be there. This is not part of her job anymore.
Yeah, for no other reason does she need to be there. She could have left hours ago.
They get the baby out. Callie watches as Addison hands the baby to the mother.
Can you imagine? That's got to be just
and everyone's
worst.
Crying. Oh, God, it's so heartbreaking. But Callie is there. Callie is crying and Callie puts her hand on Addison's shoulder and it is so beautiful. And you're like, finally, there's a friendship for Callie or Addison. Finally.
It's exact. So I was watching this when Ev's sister was coming around to pick up his mother. She'd been staying with us and I'm in the bedroom watching it and they've all arrived. I turned to Ev, I'm like, I've got like 10 minutes left. I need to finish watching this. And I screamed out, finally, to the point where one of the kids came running in to make sure I was all right. Yeah, I was so excited. And then after a day of just so much bonding and heartache, they're sitting in the corridor breathing. So you're sleeping with Sloane? And Addison says, it was a hailstorm of self-loathing and misery, and Tamsa would like to get wet in that hailstorm. We're going to go and have a little drink. And it's one of the first times Addison really reaches out and says to Callie, do you want to go get a drink? Callie's beeper goes off. And she,
I was so mad at the show in this mm-hmm. moment.
It's so like, mad.
Come on.
Give the bitch a break.
You're doing them dirty. They finally both made friends and... Not even and friends on their level.
Mm-hmm.
There's only dudes
attendings
at this hospital
that we've seen so far. Yeah. But Callie says no, but I do want to
because she gets paged. It's so annoying. It's so frustrating. The show does them so dirty.
But it is the promise of friendships to come.
Oh, I wanted it. They need it now.
Now. Well, you know who really. Shouldn't have gone on a drink now?
Meredith.
And Mark, you're setting all these boundaries, but you're going for an alcoholic beverage? It's not very profesh.
No, it's not. But I kind of get it from Meredith. This is Derek's best mate. She can get a little bit of insight if she plays her cards mm-hmm. right. She can learn a lot about Derek from these moments, and she's so obsessed with Derek. She wants to know everything. And this is her in.
And that insight was... Run away. Oh, no, it's not. But that's what Mark is saying. Run away.
Well, because Mark's saying that Derek is damaged goods and Mark damaged him.
Yep.
Which is true.
It's not wrong.
But then damaged goods walks into the bar and wants to start things over. Sees Meredith, comes up to her and says, hey, I'm Derek Shepherd. We met in this bar. And back then you didn't know my name. You didn't know my history. You didn't know about my wife. You didn't know anything. But I want to start again. And I want you to know me. So, hello. Hi, I am Derek Shepherd. And Meredith almost walks away. She says, you're too late. You walked away. You left. But then she changes her mind and says, hi, I'm Meredith Grey.
And I remember being so smitten with this.
Oh, same. Definitely.
Like 15 years ago. Whereas now I'm like, no, that is... You do not get to sweep this all under the rug.
He wants a clean slate.
He does not deserve one. He has done nothing to earn a clean slate. He has done no scrubbing. He has done no apologizing.
Mm.
He has not shown in any way that he can be a better human than what he has presented himself to.
Well, she doesn't know that. She doesn't see that. So the last thing we see in this episode is the reason why Callie got paged. Got paged away from making a new friend.
Oh!
What?
I didn't even click. That's why Callie got paged.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's what Callie got paged about. Yeah.
So all the boys came back from their camping trip, and instead of just going home.
I know.
They all came to the hospital.
They're all smelling like fish and earth and leeches, and they just decide to come straight to work.
Yeah. And George comes running up to Callie because she's obviously messaged him or something saying, like, I need to speak to you. But it's not for the reason that he thinks.
She says, I need to speak to you. She pulls back a curtain of a bed behind her and says, it's about your dad. And George's dad.
His dad, who he's been talking about all episode. Yeah,
George's dad is laying in the hospital bed. And that's the episode, guys.
That's it.
Thank you so much for listening. We are very keen to hear your thoughts, and hopefully we discussed this episode in a way that felt right, but we are so open to hearing from you. We are so open to hearing any comments, any feelings that you all have. We are here. Please talk to us about it.
Do also know that questions are always welcome, and we are more than happy to put you in contact with people who may be better than us at answering those questions.
Totally.
But any homophobic or transphobic statements will not be tolerated.
No TERFs allowed.
No TERFs allowed. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
Vagina.
Sing it.
Bye.